John Blackwell is gone. A championship slipped away. And now the athletic director is stepping down. What the hell is going on in Madison? I'm Rajiv. He's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers! Ring one up!
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome to the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday evening to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers on today's show. This is one of those moments where it feels like everything is shifting at once for Wisconsin athletics. You've got a major roster hit with John Blackwell leaving, a national title slipping away for the hockey program, and now real questions at the top with athletic director Chris McIntosh stepping down. It's a lot, and it forces you to take a step back and ask where this program really stands right now. But at the same time, there are some early signs coming out of spring football that might give fans something to hold on to. So today, we're breaking it all down, what it means, what's next, and where the Badgers go from here. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. It's extremely helpful for the show. Thank you to all the loyal subscribers and the loyal listeners. We've had just a really fun time doing the show, as always. So just wanted to say once again, thank you to everybody. Justin, how you doing, man? Let's start there. Happy Sunday, Master Sunday, always nice.
I'm doing good. I'm a little frazzled over the last couple hours. Let's get the biggest news that's happened since the last news. Rap will be back this next year for basketball. I was like, really? Like, all the stuff that we have going on to talk about already, and then this drops tonight, too. Like, I guess it's nice to see some positive news, because most of the things that we're going to be discussing are not necessarily that. But I'm glad we're getting him back. It's good to see that. But, yeah, obviously the biggest news tonight, McIntosh stepping down or moving on to another position. Could there be any more upheaval with the athletic department than what we have right now?
It's an interesting time. Interesting time. Yeah, I was preparing, doing some pre-production for the show earlier today, and I posted on Twitter that we're doing the show tonight. We're talking about football. We're talking about basketball. We're talking about hockey. And then Bill Woj, our good friend, added me in the comments and was like, oh, you all should talk about Mac leaving. And that was like 5 minutes after it came out. I'm like, wait, what? So I sent a text. I broke the news to Ryan and Justin because I had got this message from Bill Woj. So thank you, Bill. And then everything was like, okay, well, now we got to shift the show and we got to change everything. So yeah, here we are. So yes, big news. I'm sure you've heard it by now if you're watching this live. If not, and you're going to, when you see this tomorrow, it's going to be big news. Chris McIntosh is stepping down as athletic director of the University of Wisconsin Athletic Department and taking a job with the Big Ten as the Deputy Commissioner of Strategy. Interesting. Very interesting. So he will be moving on to the Big Ten Conference. So we're going to talk about that. Obviously, we're going to start with that. We're going to get into some basketball stuff. We're going to get into hockey. I was at the national championship game last night. Just absolutely brutal, brutal ending to the game. The Badgers could not finish it off. Had a great time, though. And man, does that hockey team deserve a crap ton of credit. Like, they're just... That is an example of what we would love all of our Wisconsin sports to look like. But Wisconsin sports have a bit of an upheaval right now.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to look at it, it sucks that we lost. But from the standpoint of what it was expected of Hastings, and like, this was his season to prove that proof of concept for him, that, hey, I can do it here. We can get to this level. And now the recruiting follows it. Because he's not at Minnesota State anymore. Now he's going to be getting real guys to buy into him at this level and say, I can do this at Wisconsin. And now if he can get a couple of guys that are just a little bit higher talent level, everything changes with that program. Like, he's going to have some opportunity here to really grow from this.
Yeah.
I mean, they have proven, even with this lineup, which was inconsistent this year, when they were on, they were just dynamite.
Yeah, man, it was really fun. It was really, really great to be there. We're going to talk about it because, again, they deserve so much credit. I just wish all of our, you know, the teams that we talk about the most on this show, not that great right now. Well, at least the basketball team, not that good in tournament, and the football team, just not that good. So that's unfortunate. But obviously, big story of the day. Good buddy Ryan Herring's joining us. Thanks for joining us, Ryan, as always. So let's just start with the big news, of course. Chris McIntosh leaves. So, Ryan, I'm going to just start with you. We did a little show, stuff on your show. You've had a couple hours now to digest it and get some more information, whatever you've done. Instant reactions right now as you sit about this news with athletic director Chris McIntosh being gone.
Yeah, stoked to be on your guys' channel as always as well. Wish we could do all this more. I'm actually honestly cautiously excited. I've had a few hours to think about it and a few hours to drink a little bit, and I'm honestly kind of cautiously excited. I got a summer shandy here.
There you go.
I really don't think, and I mean this with no disrespect whatsoever to Chris McIntosh, tremendous Badger, a legacy guy. I don't think he was best suited for this era of college sports. I think he's a relic of a different era. That's where he grew. That's where he cut his teeth. And I do think it hampered Wisconsin. This is a tremendous, to me, it's a tremendous opportunity to move Wisconsin. We said this on the show forward. I think they can do it. I think there's no reason not to do it. I think Wisconsin is tremendously appealing to a young athletic director. You have incredible programs here, facilities being built, a tremendous state. You're in the Big Ten. I think you should be able to have a tremendously qualified pool of candidates, and I'm excited to see what they can do here.
It does like make you think that a school like Wisconsin should be able to actually like to get someone spectacular. Like, we have such a good infrastructure in place with the stadium, with the new practice facility that's coming in, with an established donor base, with an established alumni base. Like, there's so many things, Madison, all those things. So I put a poll up. I don't even know if this is going to work. I think you can tap one or two in the chat. I'm not sure. It's a new thing on our streaming platform. So check it out. It says, do you look back at Chris McIntosh's time as AD positively or negatively? So, I mean, I think holistically, that's what I want to talk about. But Justin, your thoughts first, and then I want you to answer this question for me, how you feel about the positive or negative overall on his tenure.
First, I want to just give thoughts. I mean, we didn't get to this on Ryan's show, but I kind of look at it like, with the way we look at this, in some ways, McIntosh was the Paul Christ of 80s. Like, he fit that mindset of, like, I just need to take care of things kind of internally here. And, you know, most, like, once money got involved, college sports changed overnight. And you needed somebody who was a business person, who understand trying to gain funding, and who understand trying to implement a high-level structure that required a massive PR, you know, aspect of it. And that just wasn't what was required for college athletics for forever. Like, some schools did it. Like, Ohio State and them really went out there with their PR and stuff like that. But the bulk of the country didn't. And the teams that really attacked that head-on seemed to be the ones that did the best with what was, you know, what they felt about things. And I just feel like McIntosh just wasn't somebody who really was ready for that level of looking at things, because it required a much greater view of the program and like what was required to run everything. It was much more of a corporate aspect and much more of a big picture. How do we attack this in terms of, you know, financing things and everything, that I just don't think we had to do with any of our programs in the past. I feel good about it. I really think that there's an opportunity here to make a great hire. I think you really need to be diligent with this, and I think you need to be open-minded. This cannot be a networking hire, in my opinion. Unless it's somebody who's just an A+, you cannot hire somebody simply because of who they know. Because that, to me, it would be a massive problem here if you end up reaching on somebody simply because they have ties to the athletic programs.
Look,
that's
so
my biggest fear, to be honest.
I would say that, like, so right now, 17% mostly positive, 83% mostly negative. I'm kind of in the mostly negative camp. Obviously, when the football program is what it is, and you had the issue with women's basketball, and there's some PR sort of question marks that have happened in his tenure. But I'm just
women's volleyball and hockey win titles, though.
Yeah, I'm just a little gun shy. Well, the women's hockey team just always wins. All they do is win. I'm just a little gun shy about all this stuff. Like, just because change can be great, change can be good in the long run. Change can also cause the floor to drop out of anything. Just look at the football program. That's what happens when you change anything. Now, Chris McIntosh was an extension of Barry Alvarez. It was an extension of the long tenured sort of Wisconsin culture. I 100% hear you, and I agree with you, Ryan, that like this is the new age of college football. He's got to shift, right? So you need someone that can adapt to that. I am very concerned that our school doesn't have the wherewithal and the ability to pivot properly or what fans would want, given the fact that our Wisconsin systems president was under fire and is gone. The chancellor left for Columbia. You have an interim chancellor that took over in May, the Dean of Letters and Science College. No one knows what's going to happen with that, whether that's going to be new or what. All that bigger stuff at the top has to get figured out before the lowly athletic department. It's not lowly in our eyes, but in the grand scheme of things, it's just one piece of the university, which is leaderless at the present time. So I'm just, ultimately for me, I would have liked this news to come after a chancellor was named and after there was some kind of direction from the top, then he steps down and takes the Big Ten job. But I'm curious as to your guys' thoughts on this. So he's going to the Big Ten, director of strategy. Do you feel like, I'm wondering what people think about the motivation of this. Is it because he was struggling with the NIL stuff? Is it because he's just got an opportunity that he thought was better and then he was bye-bye Wisconsin? Or I wonder if there's some kind of like backroom stuff about this. Like, is there anything that maybe not as pushed out, but were people happy with him? Clearly not. Fans, 83% no. So like, I wonder what sort of led to this decision. What do you think about that, Ryan?
It's a really good question, not surprisingly, coming from you. It's well-reasoned, well thought out. You know, I think at a lot of times in life, you just want to go somewhere where it's a little less stressful. Like, it's a lot of spotlight on you at the University of Wisconsin when you're running this thing and football's not great and fans are booing you and yelling for your name. And then you go work in the Big Ten. That, by the way, that's going to be a cushy job. Like, what's he really going to do as director of strategic vision? Like, he's going to sit in some meetings, go to different Big Ten places, watch games, eat great food, have wonderful drinks at night with a bunch of good old boys. Like, and I'm all for that. That sounds amazing. I would like to do that. Right. So I think it's a combination of potentially this is a really nice landing spot for him. Right. He can stay connected in football, but have a job that's less stressful. And I do think there's probably some internal frustration, right, with what's going on in the program that's got to weigh on you. This is an opportunity for me to take an exit ramp while I'm still exiting on my own terms and landing in a good spot. To me, it feels like one of those situations.
I personally think it's a little bit of both. I think that he probably was kind of over it. From everything I've heard, he's not the most outgoing guy when it comes to this type of stuff and was somebody who really didn't want the spotlight. And with something like this, if you make decisions that people disagree with, you're putting yourself in that area. And that's effectively what happened. The Fickle, at least initially, could not have really gone worse after year one. Like, legitimately, year one was like, okay, it's year one. We can deal with whatever. But the last 2 years is probably the worst possible scenario that could have played out for him. And that put, for better or worse, he was given as much flack for it as what Fickle was given. And then the PR missteps with some of the other stuff. I just don't think that he was somebody that was necessarily versed for this. Like, it feels like maybe he's good at the smaller details, but not necessarily looking at the big picture in terms of how people may react to a given situation. And I think that requires a certain level of like self-awareness. And like, how would you feel? What is the worst possible case scenario of how this can play out if we botch this? And, you know, if somebody's upset about this, how does this go? Well, the reality of this is anyone that's worked business, they always tell you for every one person that's upset enough to post on something, eight people are upset about it and it travels. And for like, if you do something positive, like the transfer is not remotely as good. And that, unfortunately, he got stuck with the bulk of the things that happened during his tenure were things that were bad for the athletic department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Look, I obviously, if you ask me, do you want a new athletic director? My answer is yes. The thing is, I would have rather had it if the school had a plan, fired him, and was like, here's what we're going to do. But this is like on more on his terms. And then that puts us in a situation of like, are we ready for this? Like, hope. I'm hoping that we are. I'm hoping that there's a whole plan in place. I said earlier on your show, Ryan, communication is key here. And I want them to communicate and I want them to actually have a plan. But I would have much rather it happen on Wisconsin's terms rather than on Chris McIntosh's terms, because that can leave some issues with the program. Let me get some comments in here. Steven says, I think in a minimum, he saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to last much longer. Will Hanna, I think lack of NIL played a big role in Mac's decision. Raul Correa says, need a Wisco guy in the Big Ten offices to vouch for us. AD was not for him. He couldn't handle it. And then a comment here I wanted to get your thoughts on from Tyler Streber, always a good friend of the show. I think we need to get away from all things Barry. Just like Bo stuck with guard, Barry stuck with Mac. That's all old school college. It's a new day. Times have changed. Need new blood. Justin, curious as to your thoughts on Wisconsin guys and the culture. Like, Greg Gard has been successful with having Wisconsin guys. We went away from that for football. Look what happened. Do you feel like, you know, like, how do you, what are your thoughts on the whole culture of Wisconsin, the connection needing to really be there still?
Yeah, I don't think that I buy into that. Like, I don't think you need to stay with that. I do think you need to have a really good plan when you come into a new location of how you're going to implement things. And you need to be able to pivot quickly if things aren't working quite the way you want in order to make changes that work. I think what is a bigger deal here is, like, it can be a Wisconsin person, but you have to have somebody who's forward thinking enough to understand what the limitations are of what we were, the way we would do things prior. And that's where I think we've dropped the ball a little bit. I think we've got a lot of people that are kind of like, even with guard, like, he's pivoted to a degree, but he's still kind of the old style coach. Like, we don't really have anybody that you'd look at and say that Wisconsin is doing anything that's different than what the status quo was. We're late to adapt with a lot of things. And I think that that's where you need to attack this. It's going to make people uncomfortable to do that. But the reality is you stand a better chance long-term of being competitive by being somebody who is cutting edge on things than you are at kind of being a late adapter to everything and kind of dragging your feet. You're missing out on the potential gains by reacting that way.
Ryan, what do you think about this?
I don't think you need a Wisconsin guy. I think that's self-limiting, quite frankly.
I agree.
For how many years did Michigan need a Michigan man? And that's how they'd say it, right? Michigan men. You need a Michigan man. And it didn't work for a lot of years. Now, eventually Harbaugh did, but for a lot of years, they went Michigan man and it didn't work because they defaulted to something they knew instead of something that was better. You go to a dusty Maine, you win a title there. You know, Juwan Howard was an absolute disaster, but he was a Michigan man. You know, you need a good hire. And wherever he comes from, it doesn't matter. Here's the thing. Barry Alvarez wasn't a Wisconsin guy until he made a great hire, and then he became a Wisconsin guy. You find good people, and then they ingratiate, they intertwine with your culture. They make it better. That's what you do. You find good people, and it works. If you limit yourself to a Wisconsin guy, you are cutting your pool of people drastically down, and you're not likely to get new voices in a front office that, quite frankly,
you want an echo chamber.
You need some new voices and some new perspectives. So if it's a Wisconsin guy, amazing, as long as they're qualified. But you got to prioritize good people, good talent, good track record. And if you do that, you will make a good hire.
I mean, I do think that you're like the opportunity really is immense. It really is. Like, we've talked a lot about the athletic department as an entirety, right? Like, how confident are we in it from top all the way to bottom? And there's question marks about that. So this literally gives someone to come in and say, hey, we're going to clean all the way. We're going to clean house. We're going to keep the good people. We're going to get rid of the people that aren't working. We're going to change our whole strategy on college football and everything. It really could mean something great. I'm just skeptical. I'm just skeptical because I'm scared that a poor decision is going to be made. And that's really just what I'm really upset. I'm not in a position for this program, this athletic department, to fall any further. Okay. Because, like, I just can't right now. I just can't deal with anything else happening bad to what we're already dealing with football. And then we just lose John Blacko, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Like, it's just everything just kind of feels like it's falling apart. And the last thing we need is the leadership to fall apart. But like I said, I'm happy it's happening. I just would have rather been on our terms, you know?
So I think your fear might be a little bit misguided simply because of the fact if a new chancellor is going to be the one allowed to make the hire here, they're not going to likely, they're very unlikely to be a Wisconsin chancellor anyways. Yep. So it will come down to how much they value the input from inside sources with regards to the hire, which maybe you have somebody like Barry who throws in his two cents, but he's not affiliated with the school directly anymore. I'm sure they may talk to him and have a conversation, but my gut instinct on this is they're going to come in and they're probably, you know how it is. You get somebody that's in that level, they have their own thoughts, perspectives, and their own ego associated with everything there. They likely come in thinking, I know how to handle this. And that's going to be an aspect of it. I hope that holistically they get somebody that is a fit for Wisconsin at that chancellor position that understands how important of a hire it is. Because if you get somebody who's very academically driven, it's scary that you might get somebody who is like, you know, from an ADA perspective, they don't necessarily look at it as quite as important of a hire as what it actually is to a university.
You need to get someone who understands how important athletics are, but academics still come first. Let's just get that.
I'm not saying you disregard them. I'm saying they need to understand that you're hiring the person for this role that is specific to that role. They don't have anything to do with the academics. That's the school's job. It's their job to be the best at what they do, and it's Wisconsin's job to do the best at everything else.
Yeah, I agree. Ryan Eiler says, what's up? Sorry, go one second, Ryan. What's up, lad? System president, chancellor, AD, all the cliff coming in, chump ship. Yeah, that's true. Ryan, what were you going to say?
Yeah, sorry. Two really quick questions. Kind of probably more to you, Regine, but Justin certainly as well. Just you're speaking of your worry. If McIntosh hadn't been a Wisconsin guy and his AD track record is what it is, he was brought in at this point, football went down the drain. We've had all sorts of other issues, communication issues, women's basketball, the lawsuit stuff, that being kind of like pushed under the rug, and then it's super weird, and you have NIL issues. I think you'd be very happy to maybe let a person just look at the track record and the name aside. The other thing I'm really quick, I'll give you two, is think there's a chance this makes these other hires more attractive because now a new chancellor, someone can come in new and work with an AD that they
more
choose.
Authority. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear all that. I totally agree. And you're right. I would have wanted a change. I feel like this change just comes at an odd time. It's not typical. I guess I don't know what's typical for changing an AD, but like we've sort of kicked things off with the whole Luke Fickell situation. He's come out and said, hey, like I'm with him and we're going to do this. And we're tying our, you know, like everyone's sort of like just tying their rope to the Luke Fickell train and say, we're going to let this go now. And Luke and McIntosh did that. And then the investment came, and then we saw a pretty good transfer portal. And then we're moving in what we think is a right direction from a football perspective. To now have that sort of the head of that snake drop off, I'm just worried about what it will do to the football program. Like if it would have happened at the end of the last season, okay, but it just seems like it's an odd timing. And that I think is probably what I'm most concerned about. I don't know if I'm just way off base with that. It's just that it feels like it was on his terms and we're not equipped to quickly hire that position because we don't have a chancellor. Like it just seems like a bad time to lose your athletic director. What do you guys think about that?
I think that we don't truly know. Like to me, I still think that we're probably in a better position because of this, because of some of the moves that I've previously seen him make. I think we feel positive about coming into this season simply because of the fact that we actually saw movement, which yes, he's responsible for part of that. But I think so much of the frustration was caused by him and how things were being handled by the athletic department. So it's like it didn't have to be this way where we were in these circumstances to begin with. A lot of it was a lack of planning and foresight that led to a lot of the situation that we're currently that we had to deal with that we had to dig ourselves out of. So he was a part of the problem. Now you can argue that he was trying to fix that, but the question is, one of the biggest things that we had an issue with him was how reactive he was, and that we felt like more times than not, things had to get to a certain level of bad before he was willing to make a transition. And I think that if you have somebody that's sharper and has a little bit more foresight, they're going to be a little bit quicker to do some of these things where we look at it. And let's be honest. I mean, we probably would have, I mean, we, if we're talking early last season, we wanted him gone. And yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly on the, we wish it played out where we had a plan in place for this. I gotta believe, and this is part of the problem with Munkin leaving, there had to have been at least discussions about where they would go if they made a move like that. But with her being gone, that probably went out the window. So who knows what level of planning, if there's not really anybody to plan other than the board.
Yeah.
At this point, they're going to be responsible for the hiring. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, Rajiv, for sure. I think maybe because it came out of almost nowhere, at least externally, that might be kind of why it's a little abrasive, maybe. But just from a bigger picture standpoint, you've got your portal in already. You've got the $14.6 million state NIL deal just signed. You got facilities now underway. There's no coaching hires to be made right now. All that's pretty locked in. Your sports just ended, right? Hockey just ended. Volleyball, football's got a while. Basketball's got a while. If you could pick a time, to me, this almost feels like the best time. You'll get them in place before all your other sports start. You don't have to worry about the portal for another year. You've already got, again, your facilities being built and the NIL bill signed. You can almost tidy all this up in a package and hand it to the next AD and say, a lot of this is taken care of. Now you optimize. Now, and with a new, you know, chancellor coming in, you're able to maybe actually have alignment between those two. Think about that. Think about if you can actually get alignment between those two spots that care about athletics and the importance of it in NIL. Guys, you could have like a CEO type and a GM type that are on the same page. This could be tremendous for Wisconsin if it works out the right way.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I hear you on this, and very well said, because you're right. We are kind of in this lull in the sports calendar. And I think you are right that also it's just because of the suddenness of it that I'm just, honestly, the football program has scared me from anything. Like, I'm so scared of everything now because of what happened to our football program. And that's what, it's just like everything is just, you know, it's piling on at the wrong time, which sucks. But yeah, I hear you. I think it's very fair. Going to be very interesting to see what happens next. Will we hire a chancellor first? Is there already a plan in place? Marcus Sedbury has been named interim AD. That's not anything we need to see long term. And you know, we need to see what happens there. Any other thoughts, guys, on this? On this topic?
I have a question for you guys. In what, how do you think that this is going to be viewed by a new coach? Because I think we have a tendency to look at things through the lens of what's going on with the Wisconsin program. If you're a new AD coming in clean with no ties to the program, and you get to make this, like, there's a very real chance that everybody's probably lost a little bit of job security over this.
Sure. Pickle
absolutely has. Guard, you could still look at, because if you get somebody that comes in that's had very high pedigree with some of this stuff, his March issues to a new AD who has been at a school that has had a successful basketball program that has made runs, that he looks at Wisconsin and says, there's no reason you're on the same tier as the team that I was at, that this should be acceptable. There's a very real chance that like shortens some of guards, you know, his ability to stick around. So like, I think that there's a very real chance that there's a little bit more upheaval that could come. I'm not saying obviously nothing would change now. Like, it's Fickell's probably gone if he doesn't have a good season this year. I think we all agree on that. Guard is probably going to have to make it back to March again. And depending on what type of AD you actually get in there, you know, they may or may not look at that as enough or not much, but either case, he's probably back, but they may just say, you need to start proving that you can win in March.
Yeah. I don't think it changes anything with Foot Fickell, because that we're tied to him for year four.
Yeah. He's
locked into year four. The class is coming in. Like, there's no reason to make those changes. And I never thought we were going to keep him after next year. If he didn't win seven games, I still don't think we're going to keep him after if we don't win seven games. So I feel like, you know, that will be a perfect opportunity for the new AD to say, okay, well, I don't know what promises Chris made you, but you're out. And that's perfectly fine, right? I don't have too much of an issue with that. You have any thoughts on that or any other thoughts on this topic, Ryan?
No, I think it's a good point by Justin. I mean, I think you were coming in, the hockey coaches, volleyball, all that's pretty safe, but you're talking the big sports. I'll say this. If you're an AD coming in and you tell guard to make runs, you better also give him some NIL. That would be a nice change as well. But yeah,
it's like, also fair. That falls on the AD. They've got to give them the resources for that.
I think we all work, right? We've all probably had new bosses come in at some level at a hierarchy above us. Anytime that happens,
they want to make their mark.
There's going to be upheaval. They're going to look at people's roles. And everybody does lose a little bit of job security. It just, I think that's just the natural result of this. I think that's dead on.
Yeah, definitely. All right, boys, let's go from one interesting piece of news to another one. Not that surprising, but John Blackwell is no longer a part of our Wisconsin basketball program, probably going to either Duke or Illinois. I don't know if there's any updated info on that today. I don't think so. But it's a money thing, clearly. It's a winning thing, clearly. He has made some comments that he wants to reach the height of his career and compete for a potential champion. Illinois is a Final Four team. Duke, obviously, is a team that has what it is. And we're just really not able to compete with that. We are going to keep Winter. We did set up signing Rapp today as well. So I think that's good signs. But guard, I mean, obviously, there was nothing he could do. Blackwell's gone. Foxwell's in. We talked about Foxwell last week a little bit, obviously, but Ryan, I'm going to start with you. Just overall thoughts on Blackwell's departure and kind of where it sort of leaves us right now.
It bummed me out. I think, again, we all knew, I think, it was coming, right? But you can see things coming down the horizon when they happen. They still bum you out when it actually happens because we're fans. So you always kind of hold out hope. I do think, to some degree, we've rationalized it a little more than maybe we've needed to. We've talked about the flaws in his game a little bit more, and you know he's not worth it anyway. And maybe he's not, but if somebody's going to pay you that's what you're worth. The market says he's worth it, right? And that's a big piece that we lose. You lose. Yes, we can quibble about all of the defensive issues at times, the lack of intensity at times. There's a reason every real big time school in the country, he instantly went to the top of their boards. These coaches are really good coaches. Dusty May wants them, you know, like, for example, that's just one example of many. He gave you 20-5 on 38% shooting last year. It's a big loss for the Badgers. And just my opinion, now all opinions welcome. If anybody tries to spin that differently, I think there's a little bit of copium there. It's a really big loss. And it's going to be really hard for Greg Gard to replace that. And I feel for Greg Gard because he would have rather kept them too. Right. And he just resource wise couldn't do it. So that's my initial thought. I think there's ways forward. It's not the end of the program. I get it from John Blackwell's perspective as well, but it's a massive loss for the Badgers.
So I've got a couple of thoughts on this. And I think there's the fair amount of be careful what you wish for Blackwell making this move. You can't talk about wanting to get to the pros and feeling like you're going to walk into a top shelf team and be able to dictate what your role is going to be there. Because that's just not going to happen. I've heard statements that he wants to be more on the ball and be more show with more of his chops as a lead guard. I'm sorry, if you go to Duke or you go to Illinois, you're not going to be the primary ball handler. You're just not. You know, that's not his strength. I think I kind of look at him and I say, you need to be aligned with the fact that when you get to a team with that talent level, you may have nights where you're going to be the third guy. Wisconsin, you were always going to be number two. There's going to be some of this when you jump up to a higher pedigree program, the talent level that's there is going to dictate where you fall in that pecking order. And let's be honest, like he maximizes what he does well, but he has limitations to his game that at a place like Duke or wherever, where there's more athletic players, they're going to opt for the guys who are going to be able to create the easiest shots. And that's not always something that Blackwell was capable of. So I think what he's giving up here is that there's a certain level of comfort in what his role would be. And he's kind of gambling on the fact that he's looking for something that he may not be able to find, that he's going to get a big paycheck. But if you want to go pro, you're probably not going to find a position at a better team that's going to allow you to showcase yourself in the way you want to for the NBA.
I think that I think he's going to do just fine wherever he goes. I think he's going to be a really damn good player for if it's Illinois or Duke or whoever. Yeah, he's not going to be the primary scoring option, but he might be okay with that. And that, like, he knows he's not going to have a lot of defenses focusing on him, and things will get better for him there potentially. First of all, I have zero qualms with what John Blackwell has done. I know that there's a lot of people who are like, you know, oh, he's no longer a Badger, this or that, whatever the case is, however you feel about it, it's totally fine and fair. I in this world that they live in now, like, we all probably agree right now sitting here today, he's probably not a NBA player. I don't know if you guys think that. I don't really see him as an NBA player.
Right, I don't now, either.
Which means he has an opportunity to make $5+ million playing basketball right now. Why the hell wouldn't he do it? Like, why wouldn't he do it? Like, at the end of the day, if we could pay him what he wants, would he stay? I don't know. Maybe he does want to go to a competitor, whatever the case is. But we can't. So to me, it's a moot point because we can't pay him what he deserves. And whether we feel like he deserves it or not is also pointless. I don't blame him one bit. And I think that some of the comments that he made going out the door, could he have phrased them better? Yes. It doesn't really mean that much. No, we couldn't pay him. He was a good steward of the club. I think he was a guy that gave us his all. Like, yeah, there were times we were frustrated with him, but I understand why he left. I'm super bummed out about it. I expected it, right? We didn't expect him to actually be on this team next year because of what we're just talking about, because you were going to keep Winter and him. Maybe you could keep one of them. I'm not ultimately that bothered by it. I just want us to pivot now and figure it out. Like, take that money you were going to pay him and move it somewhere else. But I feel like the big players are popping out of the portal quickly. And then all of a sudden we're just going to be left with guard trying his best to fill a roster, which to his credit, he's done very well. But yeah, I just don't have any issue with John Blackwell leaving. I know a lot of Badger fans do, and they're really upset at him. And, you know, like I saw plenty of negative stuff on Twitter. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to do that. I just don't see that as something. I totally understand why he did it. I hate it. I hate the system. As I said in a text message, I hate the player. I don't hate the player. I hate the game. I'm not concerned about what he did. I hate that players can continue to do this, and it's just this wild, wild west of sports. But it sucks that he's gone, man. Like, I just wanted to see him come back and play again, and maybe with another transfer guard or something. But now we're left trying to fill his points. We have our two top scorers, Nick Boyd, and they're basically 40 points a game gone off this roster. Who the hell is going to score those points? Like, it's scary, man.
Yeah. I think, and I'm not, I don't begrudge him leaving. I just think that the way that he views himself is a little bit different than what's kind of reality to a degree. And that's where I look at it and I'm like, you know what? I you're going to have a great opportunity to be on a good team. I just hope you don't sour over the fact that it may not manifest itself in the way that you're expecting it to when you go to one of these bigger teams, because when you jump on a team that's loaded with stars, those numbers are going to drop a little bit and you're not going to necessarily get the shots it's not going to be dictated by you where you get what shots you get and stuff like that on a team that's more talented. But yeah, I think I agree with this from the standpoint of Wisconsin. Once we got Foxwell, I think we all knew it would be in the Badgers' best interest if you weren't pairing those two as a backcourt. Like, you can look at it figuratively from like a number standpoint and say offensively, you feel like there's some things that you would be able to do there. I think we all had some concerns about defensively, how those two would have been on the court together. And that would have been, they're both guys that you can target for right now, for better or worse. Whatever Blackwell wanted to say on his way out the door, a lot of his issues defensively were effort and focus for me defensively. And that was a big part of his problem. That is directly something he can control. And that's not going to get better unless he decides to make him, you know, work harder on it when he goes somewhere else. But I don't think either one of those guys is going to be anything more than average defender. And that probably would have hurt us in games where we saw guards that were more athletic.
Yeah, it's possible. It's not the greatest pairing there. I think offensively it actually would have worked great.
Yeah, they would have worked off each other well in that regard.
But defensively, you're probably right, Justin. I mean, the only last thing I'll say on Blackwell is, it might not work out for him, right? Mm-hmm. To your point, Justin, the grass isn't always greener. It might not be great, but when you're an adult, you have the right to make decisions that might not work. Right?
Absolutely, and he's going to get paid handsomely for it.
And that's what he's going to do, right? He's going to make potentially $3 million more. Think about this: not to sign like a 5-year contract somewhere, not to have to go overseas to hoop, maybe in Illinois, like a place he's from, mm-hmm. for $3 million for 8 months. So here's the thing: even if it doesn't work out, there's your safety net. That's generational wealth. The only other thing I'd say is these coaches aren't going after him and paying him $5 million to not feature him. Like, he's going to go somewhere where he's going to get a lot of shots. He might not be the point guard. He might not be on the ball as much as he might want to. He's going somewhere where they're not giving him $5 million to be a fourth option.
And I think when they play him, when he plays up to the level that we know he can, We saw him disappear in second halves this year, season. If he doesn't, if he goes to place for John Shire, I mean, he's not there. There's, you know, if you disappear, you're not playing, period. That's not happening.
That was one of the things I was going to say. Like, you don't have the luxury. Your talent won't bail you out at a place like Duke or Illinois or wherever, where there's other really good options that are on the roster, where it's like, you're going to have to bring it. And to be clear, him making this move may very well end up, who knows, he wins a national title out of this. There's a chance that he goes to a team and they're highly successful because he's a part of that. But my perspective is we're going to see some regression in terms of stats, and that's simply likely to be because he's going to be on a better roster.
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan, do you have confidence that we can get this basketball team back to where it was this year? 14-6 in conference, 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. We can leave out this March success or failure, but like, can we get there next year? Do you have the confidence we can do that with what needs to happen with this roster?
I hate that you cut out the March, because I was going to say, yeah, I think we could be a first round loft team next year. I think we can get there. I don't think we can win. No, I'm not. And listen, Greg Gard has done it for multiple years. I have a ton of respect for what he's done in the portal. We've talked about it a lot. At some point, you can't keep expecting coaches to find undervalued talent in the portal and coach them up to their career years, which is what he's done consistently. I'm worried about this team, guys. Truthfully, I am worried about the depth. I'm worried. I don't think I'm quite as high on Foxwell as you two are. I listen to your show. I don't dislike the player at all. I don't think I'm quite as high on him as you guys are. There's a massive gap at the 2 and the 3. You still have toughness issues at the 4 and the 5, even with Rapp and Winter back. You need 2 or 3 of your young guys to step up. Maybe one of your freshmen to play right away. The Big Ten is only getting better. Like, the Big Ten is only spending more money. They're only loading up more. Illinois just landed a really good kid from Providence today. No, I'm not confident. And I would love to be wrong. I would love to be wrong. But no, I am not confident, Rajiv.
I personally think you need to go for a 2 and a 3. And I think that what you need to do is you need to kind of do the AJ Store move, where you look for somebody who is like a 9-point-per-game guy, who's an athlete that shows a lot of upside, that hasn't broken out quite to the point where it's like, these guys are locks to be starter at some place and be high level starters. But you have to have vision here. This is where Gard has been really good. You need to look at him. He needs to look at it and say, I can find 2 guys who are athletic who maybe are being undervalued slightly, and that I think we can kind of get them to turn the corner and become what we envision them to be, which is guys that are like 13-point-per-game starters that are maybe quality athletes with the ability to bring up their scoring a little bit.
Yeah, I want to believe that Greg Gard can find lightning in a bottle for a 4th year in a row, but I don't see it happening. I think this comment from Tyler Strieber is kind of where I'm at. Next season for basketball feels like a transition year for some reason. Lots of spots to fill and young guys needing experience like Kins, Garlock, Jones, 27, 28 season. Might be better. I legitimately think this next year could be a year we miss the tournament. And I really hate to say that, but I see no signs of a team that can be like a 10, 12 win team in conference, if less we fill that defensive athletic wing position and certainly replace some of the guard points. Look, Winters could have a really good year, but I just don't know. I am very concerned about it. I think you said it right, Ryan, the toughness, the 4 and 5, like you 1 through 5, you have issues. You've got some big question mark 1 through 5. We didn't have that last year, and that is an issue now. To be fair, we also had a lot of holes last year at this time, and we filled them. So, like, it's possible, but there is a money issue, and I am concerned about it. I think that it's, again, just one more thing that I'm, like, pissed off about with this athletic department. I'm like, what more can go wrong? We just keep striking out. And that sucks. And I just don't really see it getting that much better.
Ah. They need a go-to backcourt scorer. There's got to be somebody that they can rely on to be that, because Foxwell will score, but he's not going to be a guy that you can look at and be like, he's going to go drop 25 straight games. Like, he'll occasionally hit that maybe 1 out of 5 or 6 games. He's also going to have games where he goes out and scores 8 points. And you're going to have to find somebody that you can rely on to be that 15-point-per-game guy. I don't know where you get that. But I don't think I trust that we're going to see Winter necessarily be that consistent level of a scorer, because we haven't seen it from him. Like, I know he'll have games where he plays really well, but I've never seen a game where we've consistently given him, say, 12 to 15 shots and allowed him to go off. And maybe that changes this next year, but it doesn't feel like they've ever made him that big of a focal point.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this on Winter really quick is he needs to next year. And I love
he's going to have to.
Yeah, Rajiv has been a Winter guy from the jump. If you're going to stay, you're going to be the lone returning star, and it takes a lot of resources to make that happen, and I don't begrudge anybody in that. Next year, he has to be 15, 17 a game. He has to be for this team.
I agree.
Yeah, it's, and I think he can. I absolutely think he can. I mean, he could have potentially done that this year. Obviously, you know, Nick Boyd took a lot of those points, and that's fine. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's move on to football a bit, boys. Ryan, you're going to more practices this week, right? Are you doing more?
I should be able to hit a couple of them this week, ideally. So I've been on travel, but yeah, I hope to for sure. I'll see all the guys. Nice. Last time I went down there, I got a parking ticket. Like.
Of course you did. Of course
you
did.
You and Rajiv, I've never gotten one.
I mean, were you in your car or were you in the nice car?
I was in the nice car.
Okay, well, then there's no excuse. Then I don't know. Because maybe if it was your car, then maybe you don't want people just like, that needs to be ticketed. I don't know. Okay.
Maybe they figured you had it to spend.
Right. There you go. So before I come to you, Justin, I want to get your thoughts on everything that happened this week. Ryan, I just want to, since you've been to some of the practices, what is one thing what is the biggest takeaway, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, the biggest takeaway you've had from all of your time watching this team practice so far?
That's a really good question. And I haven't been to any of the recent practices, but I think the biggest takeaway I would have, I'll say two really quick, but I'll make them quick. The first one is I really do think this quarterback room is in a light years better spot than it's been in any point since Luke Fickell's been here. Every player looks like versions of each other, if that makes sense. They can all move. They can all get out of the pocket. They can all run. I think Grimes could run 85% of his playbook for every quarterback. Maybe not at the same level. I think that is enormous. I do not think we spent enough time last year talking about how the playbook changes every time you put a new quarterback in, and that even if you had the quarterback injuries, if they all ran the same playbook and they could, that means the offense could all scheme the same things the entire year. Cause it's not just the quarterback doing different things. It's the offensive line, the running backs, the receivers. I think that created way more chaos than we let Cravens do. So I think the quarterbacks being aligned, massive takeaway. And then I'd say athleticism in the secondary. Boy, does Kyros Gaines look good at safety, guys. Boy, does Kai Bates look like a jumbo version of a faster Nizer Forkerin. Boy, does some of these guys look like athletes on the back end. So I think those would be my two takeaways off the top of my head.
Oh, love it. Love that, man. Love the excitement coming from the finally, something good we can talk about here. This is great. Justin, another week of practice. Pass rush appears to have had a good week. Your thoughts this week on anything you've read or reports that you've kind of dug into you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think one of the people that we weren't sure was going to happen for, but it seems the light is coming on, is Jalen Williams. Sounds like he's a guy pushing himself into that two deep, who's going to get himself on the field this year. I think we all felt like Clayton was a lock to find his way on the field and get a significant amount of reps this year. I wasn't sure about Williams. I'm super happy to hear it because, listen, there isn't a guy in that defensive line room that moves the way that he does that can bring to the field what he's capable of if it clicks from him from a technique standpoint. You have a 6'5" guy who's 270 pounds and moves like a tight end. And that guy is going to be able to go on there and just get physical with the guys on the edge in a way that guys like Clayton and Cheeks can't, and still have some of that pass rush burst to be able to get into the backfield.
One thing for me, a name that I loved hearing about this week was my good boy, Ryan Hopkins, a quarterback that I'm happy about that plays for our team. And I think is potentially the future. And I think you're right on, Ryan. Like the overall depth of this room is the here. And it's like, okay, we feel good about this room and we feel good about the athleticism that everyone has. And it's sort of like the floor of this room is higher than it was before, clearly. And obviously the ceiling with Cole Joseph. Heard some good things about him as well. The pass rush has been a bit of a story this week, which is good. I mean, you obviously brought up Jalen Williams, Justin. Can I ask the simple question though? Are we excited about the pass rush, or are we worried about the O-line when you talk about this kind of stuff? I know I'm worried about the O-line, which I've talked about much on the show. I don't need to rehash that. But like when you see stuff like this in practice, I mean, Ryan, you've seen a couple of them. I know you not recently, but like I'm always worried about the other side of the ball when the pass rush is just getting home and really dominating in practice.
Yes, is the answer. Yes to both. Go ahead, Justin.
So I was talking with Jake Kokorowski, one of our buddies, who gets to see all the practices. And I was asking him about this specifically because I know that he's seen more than any of us have. His thoughts on it were basically he feels pretty good about the first string group. He doesn't know about the depth. And I feel like the second string is getting carved up a little bit. And that's fine. We knew that was going to happen. It was a lot of young guys and guys who are probably really pushing. I think the edges were doing okay. Sounds like Simmons is actually pretty solid on that second group, but Royski and them are kind of works in progress. But the first string line sounds like they've been battling pretty good. I've heard from multiple people that Wilkins has actually looked pretty solid at tackle and that Haywood just flat out looks like a beast on the right side. And then the other one that I've heard is Kowicki has been really good. The guard positions, I think we're going to figure out what that is. It sounds like Mandel's been dinged up. I think they like guys like Cubberly and Cherry, but I don't think we necessarily know what we have in them. Other than mentality, I know those guys are going to be just brutes in there. But we'll see what level of actual technique that they're being able to provide out there. But I feel pretty good about the first string. I knew the defense was going to beat up a little bit. Like I said, it's incrementally. The spring to me is you've got to get these guys reps together so that they can get cohesive. Because the defensive line can be caught out of sync and still be effective. The offensive line can't. They have to be moving as one or it's a play's just going to blow up.
All caveats, and Rajiv, to your point, I want to just correct. I've only been to one practice, so I don't want to oversell anything I've said. I should be more this one. Very usual caveats of it's spring. There's a lot of new pieces, right? You have a new right tackle here that was a guard last year. You have a new center. You have guards in new spots. You have a left tackle or a right tackle that was a left tackle, and he's coming off an injury. So I think let's be fair to a lot of offensive linemen, either in new spots, shaking off rust. Mm-hmm. It should take a little while.
Yeah.
I think you'd have very real concerns about the pass rush if, man, nobody's hitting the quarterback. This right tackle that was a left tackle last year after not playing is shutting everybody down. And this other right tackle that was a guard is giving up nothing. So
very fair point.
I think that's real. However, Rajiv, you and I have been in alignment on a lot of this. I also have real concerns about the offensive line. I'm not sure Wilkins is going to be a great answer left tackle. I don't know. I've talked to Brian Smith came on. He's seen him. But I also talked to somebody at Ole Miss, similar to our conversations last year with Davis Hines. And I talked to one of his former coaches. And I told you guys that. I'm like, hey, they don't think he could be a tackle in the Big Ten. I didn't get great confidence from the Ole Miss guy either that saw him and said, I just need to see it. That's where I'm at. I'm not going to draw conclusions in spring. I'm also not going to come away from spring, even if Wilkins looks pretty good throughout it, saying, yep, for sure locked in. I need to see
for sure. Yeah. Well, we ran the ball effectively at times last spring and last fall, and it didn't manifest in the season. So I think we all feel like no matter what happens during spring and fall practice, until we see it actually look good on the field in September, none of us are going to believe that it's there. I think what we're shooting for this year is solid. Like if we can get solid offensive line play, I'm going to be like, it will be a sigh of relief for me to be like, okay, this is back to functional offensive line play, which is something we haven't seen in what, 4 or 5 years now. We really haven't had a great offensive line play since Braylon's second sophomore season.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about like the defensive backs and the O-line and all that kind of stuff. I want to just get both of your thoughts on everything that you've read so far and the one practice you watch and anything that you've sort of consumed with practice so far. Your thoughts right now on the receiver room, Justin, like how are you feeling about that? What have you kind of heard about it? Or anyone that's sort of like popping up that is surprising you? Like what are your overall thoughts on that room? We haven't talked about that room a lot on this show.
It's been so tough because nobody has really come out and said this is the starting group. I've heard good things about DiMaggio, which quite honestly,
you
I
mean
think
Domingo?
It's DiMaggio.
Oh, it is DiMaggio.
Yes.
No way.
Okay. That's
I got corrected on a couple of times and I've heard multiple people say that. Yeah, it's not Domingo. It's DiMaggio. It doesn't look that way. I get it
anyway,
but yeah. Anyways, I've heard good things about him. Coleman has made a few plays here and there. I don't trust him yet. Like, I need to see him do it on the field and when it matters. Because I'm like, that's just the giant ball of clay player that you hope that it clicks. Hilton's been pretty solid, it seems. Yep. But I haven't had practices where we've come away from it and heard this guy's consistently showing out. Honestly, some of the names that I've heard more than others are the freshmen. Cash, I keep hearing Cash Brock's name pop. I keep hearing Thibodeau's name pop out here and there. They're not going to play, but I think what we're hearing is that these guys are guys that we hit on, that there's ability there that is going to be something to dream on in a year or so. But right now, they're just kind of getting by on athleticism. But there's nobody that I look at. Like, I wouldn't be able to put together a two deep right now if you asked me. It would be basically chucking names at it.
We're going to do that after spring, so you better be ready. Ryan, any thoughts from you on the receiver room?
I think Justin hit some of that pretty well. It's hard to really know for sure. I do like some of the things we've heard in bursts about Kearney, too. Yeah. They seem to want to use Henry more this year, but I caution, they used him a lot in practices last year, and then when the season started.
I haven't heard much about him recently.
Yeah, he never really transitioned it into the field. I will say the Coleman stuff to me, if you're going to pick out the most exciting kind of blurbs I've heard, and I'm like, I mean, I'm with Justin. I don't know for sure, but Malachi Coleman is like the 67 Roadster that you have in your garage. And when it starts firing up, when it just starts to like, oh my gosh, I might have something here. He's a lottery ticket. So hearing early, he made a couple plays and a couple really nice catches. And it took him a little bit in spring, it feels like, to get going. But he's the home run. He's the lottery ticket. He's the guy that you can scratch off and get an actual NFL receiver. So to me, that's the most exciting part, because he is a true difference maker if it clicks. I had somebody before the season, or after he committed, before the season, it's very before the season, after he committed, say, this is one of the two or three most athletic receivers in the Big Ten. And this guy's a scout. That's what this guy does for a living. Not affiliated with Wisconsin. One of the most two or three physically talented receivers in the Big Ten, Ohio State included. So that's what gets me excited. Because if it clicks for him, guys, watch out.
Do you think that he's more than just a nine route?
I don't know if he has to.
I've watched some of his one-on-ones, and he is not a guy that's super fluid in his cuts. Like, he's kind of all arms and legs kind of going in all, and it's not, like, tight. And that's why with some of that, it's like you got a lot of body parts going in different directions. And then you watch some of these other guys that are a little bit smaller that just look more fluid and, like, the body control seems to be a little bit better. And that's what I worry about with him. Like, I know he can run really fast in a straight line, and he can jump through the gym. But I worry about him being able to actually create, you know, the level of separation or to be enough of a technician to make easy situations for himself, or if it's going to be a lot of high effort, I need to run past this guy.
I think more of that. And I don't know if that's a major problem, right? Like, a tool for every job, like my grandpa used to say. And if his tool is to be the best damn nine route runner, the best, just you just run by people and make a safety play 17 yards back off the line of scrimmage. And we can throw 50-50 balls to you if they don't put a safety back there. I think you're probably right, Justin, but I actually think that's just fine. If he can do that at a really high level, we haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah, the spreading of the defense is so critical. If you have a deep threat that can just do that and can make that happen, yeah, good. The one thing that I would say is, I like some of the off the field stuff, and Brooks seems like a guy that I feel like could have taken a bit of a step this year, and leadership wise, kind of some of those soft skills. Henry, I just think that some of those sort of vet guys in our room could really have a good year. And of course, I have still Hilton. You know how I feel about Hilton. I think he's gonna have a good year. You see some good stuff on him, but I like that. I've heard Chris Brooks' name a lot, and that's just someone that I hope can really come out, because he's been, talk about it, just a steward of this team. Like, he's been around a long time. He plays his butt off. Every spring we talk about him. Every fall we kind of don't. So I'm hoping this is the year where we talk about him in the spring and we talk about him in the fall, which would be good. Any other notes on football, guys?
Yeah, one last note on that. I will say Brooks seems to absolutely be the leader in that room.
Yep.
In terms of the guy who's the upperclassman, kind of setting the standard for how they want drills run and everything else.
Running backs really quick. Several people pretty impressed with the size and the build of some of those guys they brought in. I myself included, Abu Sama, seeing him in person, I think he's going to be really, really good for us. Jackson, he's a
really good 240 frame.
Dude, he I said when he committed, I think there's your short yardage guy, your red zone guy. I think that is going to line up. I like the size and the physicality of our running backs. If that offensive line is better, I think we have the hammers to kind of pound away on some defensive line this year.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, man. It's going to be exciting. Last thing before we leave today is I just wanted to touch on the hockey team a little bit. I was at this game last night. Super, super fun. Got to see a lot of people that watch this show and watch Locked On. One of the guys who cleans the ice, like lives in Vegas, cleans the ice like during timeouts and everything like that, plays hockey with my brother-in-law, who was standing right next to me. He recognized me, not the guy he plays hockey with, which I thought was hilarious. I loved it. And he was like, I watch you and Ryan and Justin. Like, he was so kind, literally, like, it was so great. So thank you to all the people that I saw last night. And some of the people from the university got to see Melvin Gordon last night. Really, really great time. The hockey team. Why don't all of our teams play like this? They just play their butts off. They got through. They were an unseeded team. Like, technically they were 3 seed, but unseeded in their bracket in their 16 team. They weren't one of the top 4 seeds, nor was Denver for that matter. Denver's a team who has won the most NCAA championships ever, by the way. I think they're up to like 11 or 12 now. We still have our 6, which is still in the top 5 of national titles. But, you know, we would go up 1-0, and then I don't know what the refs were doing at the end of the game. Like, there was no reason for them to get a penalty and us not to. The slashing was crazy. The tripping was crazy. But I don't know enough about hockey to know all that. So my brother-in-law, who knows a lot about hockey, was right next to me telling me it was an injustice. And, of course, talking to other people, you know, they also felt the same way. But we don't cover this enough. I've talked about it with Justin. Like, we're gonna next season, every show, we're going to do a little segment on hockey because they really deserve it. Like, the women's hockey just won the national title. We obviously talk about volleyball a lot, and the men's hockey team just does what they do. Meanwhile, our basketball team can't get out of the first round, and our football team can't get to a bowl game. So kudos to the men's hockey team. And congratulations on an incredible season. It was awesome last night. They fought their butt off. Denver's a really good team, very well coached. Mike Hastings is going to do wonders with this program and really take Wisconsin hockey back where it belongs. And I think Hastings is going to be a guy that will 100% bring us a national title. We haven't won a national title in 20 years. I thought we were going to do it last night. I was so bummed. I literally had flashbacks to 2015. It didn't hurt as much as 2015, as I'm sure you guys would agree. But having a team like Duke, a team that just wins all the time, Denver is basically the Duke of hockey. Okay. They are the team that they just win everything. And that was, it put me back into 2015 and the pain I felt after losing a national title. And I don't care what the sport is. The national title is an incredibly impressive thing. So I'm just really proud of these guys for getting as far as they did. Any of your thoughts on, I think you guys watched the game, but I know you don't watch too much hockey, but overall thoughts on any of that.
Yeah. I think that this basically gives the opportunity for Hastings to prove what he can do here. And this is kind of a lame duck roster in a way. It's only his third year in. It's a lot of upperclassmen that were guys that he didn't necessarily bring in. But I expect a lot to happen here in terms of recruiting for him going forward, because now you can prove that you can hang with the top teams, which means that, I mean, he was always a good coach. Like at Minnesota State, he just never had the resources. Now you have an opportunity where you're in a big time program where maybe you can bring in a couple of those guys that are, you know, NHL talents, and you bump this another level to go even further. These guys played their butts off, but like the teams that everyone were talking about, Michigan was loaded with NHL guys. And that's why people were talking about that. It was kind of a mini upset almost with Denver taking them out. I feel like Wisconsin's got another rung to go up with that, where Hastings gets an opportunity now to say, I need you to come here, and it changes everything for us. And you're going to get that. And he likes teams that are a little bit on the older side. He likes guys that are physically developed. And I think that's the way to go. It seems to be really effective. But yeah, I think that he's got an opportunity to make this team. I think he will get a title at some point, but I think he gets an opportunity to make this team that they are a Frozen Four level contender every year going forward.
I was very damn proud. It was awesome. And it's a trip, right? Because we know football and basketball so well because we covered all the time. And I know baseball. I love baseball. I grew up with it. To really be into a sport where you don't know the rules, it's kind of a trip. Like at one point when Hauser lost his stick, I'm like, grab the – I don't know if it's friend. Like, get him the peppin' stick. Somebody just give it to him. Call timeout. What the hell is happening?
That's what I was doing. I'm like,
you can't.
Somebody else on defense can't give it to him.
Timeout right then. You can't call timeout like that.
What is happening? The man doesn't have a stick. Is that a thing? I mean, football, then the helmet comes off. They blow the play dead. Blow it dead. What the hell are you looking at? Like, I was losing my mind on these plays. Like, I still don't really know what icing is, but I yell every time. You know, like, I was so into it, right? Because I think I mentioned this on my show. I might not have. I might have said it in the Discord, but some of my teams I've been most proud of in moments when I was coaching were after a tough loss where you bowed up against a team that was probably better than you, but you played your ass off. You played so hard. And in the end of it, in the locker room, you could really look at it, you know, all of our ladies and be like, yeah, you guys were incredible. It is what it is. And it feels like that was this Wisconsin team. I think they played incredible and they played amazing. And Denver's just awesome. And hats off to their goalie. It was tremendous, and it made me proud as a Badger fan. I don't really know the sport. You know, somebody asked me in my show, was like, hey, was that late penalty a good call? And I'm like, that'd be like asking a caterpillar if a pass interference call was good. I don't know.
It
I
was
don't know.
Not a good call. Okay. It was definitely not a good call. Believe me, that was right in front of me when it happened. There was no reason for that to be called, especially like that's just one of those things like game state too. There's no reason for them to call that penalty. It didn't affect anything that happened. In fact, we should have had the penalty the time before that. We had tripping near the blue line. It was pointless. It was awful. You put a comment up here. The commentators seem more into Denver. Just my opinion. I could just be being salty. I didn't listen to the commentators, but you guys obviously.
Yeah. My opinion was that they were giving credit to Wisconsin, but the second Denver did anything, cause we didn't separate, they were all about Denver. Oh, they rope-a-dope. This is what they do, whatever. Like they're just kind of playing dead for the first two periods so that they can come back when they're behind. It's like, no, there's literally no coach out there. It's like, hey, let's give up a lead so that we have to fight back and take it from the other team. I think Wisconsin was kind of the plucky underdog, which I would have thought the commentators would have been more on board with that storyline. They seemed like they wanted to sell like this is the juggernaut Denver team, and I realized their young their coach is really young. I was reading some of the stuff before this that he's somebody that the NHL is interested in too, and people are talking about, well, does he ever want to make the jump? That he's going to be really selective with that. And I get that. You have a young coach who's super successful. Mm-hmm. That it's like kind of they're building kind of a dynasty, but I thought given the route that Wisconsin took to get there, that they would have been a little bit more talking up like, wow, this is really crazy that this team kind of came together at the right time and really proved themselves, you know, worthy of being here.
Well, and as I said, and it really is true from what I've heard about this from a lot of people that know, Denver is the Duke of college hockey. So you wouldn't be surprised if Duke was getting that same kind of commentary. We hear it all the time, right? Duke is constantly getting the love from everybody at ESPN and everywhere. That's the same thing that happens with Denver specifically in this sport, which is bananas. But I was sitting with my brother-in-law who knows the sport, plays it three times a week and goes to every Golden Knights game and follows college hockey closely. And he's like, you guys clearly just outplayed Denver. But it was just one of these things where Denver just finds ways to win. And this is how this is why they have however many titles they have, 11 or 10 or whatever it is. They just do that. But we outshot them 2-1. Like we had so many more shots on goal. It was really
way more than that for a long time.
Yeah, it was really disappointing that happened. But this is what it is, right? And Denver just knows how to win, and it absolutely sucks. If you are still with us watching this, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Thanks so much for all the support of the show. This is very, very helpful. Comment on the show as well. Like, let us know a feedback that you have. Let us know what you think about all the things. Let us know your thoughts on Chris McIntosh. Let us know your thoughts on John Blackwell. Guys, first of all, Ryan, thanks for joining us. And also, final thoughts. Any final thoughts on anything McIntosh related, football, anything, Ryan? I'll hit you first. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I think we covered. I think I covered McIntosh well enough. Can you go up and put that last Mr. October comment up if you can see it? That'll be my final thought. So for those who don't know, I worked at ESPN for a bit, and Mr. October says, Ryan, if you knew the sport, you'd still be with ESPN. Thanks for not knowing it. Funny story. They put me on an ESPN hockey game one time, and then I was never on again. And I'm like, oh, I'm not on the hockey schedule anymore. And I was like, I've never met a sportsman act that knows less about that sport than you, Ryan. Like, you will never cover hockey again here. So they put me on one ESPN, on one hockey game to cover it, and I was never put on a hockey game again at ESPN.
Yeah, I love it. And this is great. Mr. October wants you doing what you're doing, running Locked On Badgers and coming out with us. So heck yeah, man, that's great.
Ryan, like Monty when Bob Uecker's character passed out in Major League 2.
doing the play-by-play. Hit. Caught.
I love the sport, man. I loved it, though, so I don't want to hate on it. That's a me thing. That's a me problem that I need to correct.
What Justin, are you doing women's thought. Field hockey on ESPN?
There you go.
The Ocho. You can.
This is a sport I know, actually, a little bit.
Okay.
Jesus. Justin, any thoughts before you close the show?
Another big week of football coming up here. Honestly, I'm guessing Saturday will likely be a scrimmage, which hopefully we start to hear some things come out. It sounds like Saturday was the first they did some more actual live. What I will say is people need to relax a little bit. I said it on some of the online form or on 247, I think. Spring is for teaching. Fall is for executing. Right now, these guys are figuring out what they're supposed to be doing. You got a lot of new bodies. You want everyone to figure out how to do things correctly, and you work forward and build off of that. So if it's disjointed a little early, we just want to end strong and take that into the summer and then take it into the fall where you want to look crisp. If we're still struggling on offense and with the offensive line play, when we start getting midway through fall camp, then we have things to worry about. We'll absolutely have things where like, okay, this is a problem. But as of right now, I think we just want to hear that things are looking better. And by all accounts, for the most part, that's been the case. Every position group sounds like it's growing. Nothing's perfect, but we are hearing good things. Quarterback, in all honesty, it sounds like Adams is the best backup quarterback we've had in Fickell's time here. He seems like he's got the most upside too. Like he's got a good frame, a live arm. Bigger arm than I think anyone we probably had, you know, backing up. And that's a big deal because he's got some touch and some passing. He might have right now before Hopkins has got everything together, he might have the best arm out of the quarterbacks. I think Hopkins has more long-term upside there. But as of right now, Adams is probably the guy that's the most polished in terms of a passer.
By the way, if you're watching on YouTube, I love that I'm getting stock updates behind Ryan with his ticker. It's so good.
Amazon up 2%.
Sports scores and stocks. He's a one-stop shop. We talked about it a little bit before, but I just want to say once again, like, just get it right, Wisconsin. Figure it out. You don't have many chances to do this. Every team is going to jump ahead of you. Every team is investing in NIL and totally taking this thing to the next level. We could be caught in the bottom barrels of the conference if we do not get this right and get a guy or a girl that can understand this system and that can take the entire program forward, all the athletic department all the way through. We need alignment with the administration and with the athletic director. We need direction and we need to communicate. And I would love to see that. It's going to be whatever's going to happen. We're going to talk about it, but it's going to be crazy. And hopefully it all works out for the best. Thank you once again for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.